Dad's study was right at the top of the stairs, and that's where we had services. I preached at the bottom. My sister sat halfway up with her baby doll. Like any baby, her doll cried, and she'd get up and take it out, and I had no one left to preach to. But we'd work past that. But I wanted results. And as I recall that particular day, went up and Dad was in his study working on something and was crying that I couldn't get anybody to come forward. And his response, I will never forget, he said, "I know how you feel, son." Know how you feel. Oh, those are some memories. That goes back a long way. What a wonderful week it's been. We have just thoroughly enjoyed our time together with you all. It's gone so quickly, but it's just been a very, very pleasant week for us to get acquainted with a lot of new brothers and sisters, reacquainted with a few that we haven't seen in quite a while, made several other connections, and that's all just been a great blessing for us. We've enjoyed worshiping with you all. We appreciate all the encouraging things you've had to say. We appreciate you feeding us too well. Get back to reality on that tomorrow. But it just everything has just been wonderful, and we're so grateful for the invitation to come and be with you. And it's been especially great to get to know Don and Tracy a little bit. Just wonderful week we've spent together, and I've come to really appreciate him and her, as I know all of you do from the things you say, and that's been great. And I'm glad for that. What a great opportunity this has been. If you're coming our way, come by and visit us at Viking Drive anytime. We'd be delighted to have you meet with us. We're studying the book of James. And as I said last night, we're not going to make any effort tonight in the last lesson to try to cover all the material in the book that we have not. I decided rather just to choose one lesson that I thought might be a good finish or wrap up for the series. You'll just have to study some of the other material on your own. But I want to take you this evening to a text in chapter 5 where James talks to us about living patiently. And it's kind of interesting to me that in the book of James, he almost bookends his letter with references to patience. At the very beginning point, as he starts addressing these Christians that are encountering various trials, he says, "I want you to do that with all joy, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience." Now in chapter 5, he comes right back to it again and says, "Therefore, brethren, be patient." I will point out to you that in this book, and it's characteristic of your New Testament throughout, there are two different words that are used that various translations will render patience in the New Testament. And James uses both words. The word that he used in chapter 1, principally, that occurs just one time in the text tonight, is a word that literally means to abide under or to bear up under. And it's the picture of someone who's got a heavy load placed on his shoulders. But rather than sinking down and shrinking, he stands up and abides under the load. And this word is sometimes rendered perseverance or endurance in the New Testament. The other word, that's primarily the one in our text tonight, is a word that literally means long temper. We don't use that, but we use the opposite. We talk about somebody being short-tempered. Well, James's word means long temper, patience. And the simplest way to think about those two words is the first one says patience is not giving up, and the second one says patience is not blowing up. And we need both of those things to be patient. My own personal definition of patience that I preach to myself is patience is the ability to wait with a good attitude. And I say that to myself just every little bit when there's something that's trying my patience. I'm going to wait with a good attitude. I'll smile and say that to myself. That's what we need, the ability to wait with the right disposition. Let's look at the text in James chapter 5 tonight. Just four things that I want to point out to you in James 5, beginning at verse 7. Therefore, be patient, brethren, until the coming of the Lord. The farmer waits for the precious produce of the soil, being patient about it until it gets the early and late rains. You too, be patient. Strengthen your hearts. The coming of the Lord is near. Do not complain, brethren, against one another, so that you yourselves may not be judged. Behold, the judge is standing right at the door. As an example, brethren, of suffering and patience, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. We count those blessed who endured. You've heard of the endurance of Job and have seen the outcome of the Lord's dealings, that the Lord is full of compassion and is merciful. Be patient, brethren. And the first thing that James does is once again reminds us that some things are just going to take some time. And in our instant age, that is not something that we are often very satisfied with, because we like things to be done very quickly. So we cook food in microwave ovens and we do instant food if it's not going in the microwave. And we want everything to be taken care of. It doesn't work that way. James illustrates that with farming. Farmer goes out and prepares the soil, and then he plants the seed. And he might well like, if he could go out the next day or the next week and harvest the crop and repeat that process, that might be more profitable to him. But he knows that that's just not how that works. He's planted, and now he's just got to wait. And if the farmer can learn to wait for his harvest and his income, James says that Christians are also going to need to learn how to wait for certain things to unfold and to come about to some resolution. I want to suggest to you tonight three areas in which we need to learn how to wait, how to be patient. One of them is in the area of teaching. Teaching the lost, especially, but even teaching among our brethren. In the book of 2 Timothy, and it is one of three letters that the Apostle Paul wrote to preachers to talk to them about their work. In the book of 2 Timothy chapter 3, I believe, chapter 2, 2 Timothy 2, beginning in verse 24, we have here what to me is a list of the qualifications of preachers, and the qualifications of elders in 1 Timothy 3 and deacons in 1 Timothy 3. In this text, it's preacher. Now, he doesn't call them preachers. He calls them the Lord's bondservant here, but that was a favorite expression Paul used of himself and other preachers. He said in 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 24, the Lord's bondservant must not be quarrelsome, but kind to all, able to teach, patient when wrong, with gentleness correcting those who are in opposition, if perhaps God may grant them repentance, leading to the knowledge of the truth. In chapter 4 of the same letter, he said in verse 2, preach the word, be ready in season and out of season, reprove, rebuke, exhort with great patience and instruction. As a preacher, I need patience. I have to remember that what I know, I have spent a lifetime learning. And a lifetime relearning some of it because I forgot some of what I had already learned. It took a long time to accumulate the things that I know. And often when we're starting with somebody that's pretty well a blank slate when it comes to spiritual things, especially Bible knowledge. And you have to start at the beginning and start with basics and start to build. And it's going to take people a while to grasp some of the concepts and then to build on top of it. And if they have been exposed to error and have adopted that into their thinking, then it's also going to take some patience to kind of undo some of that and help them to get past that. All that just takes time. And Paul points out in 2 Timothy 2 that occasionally there may be an adverse response to a point that you're making. And so the preacher needs to be patient when wrong. They're not really upset with me. It's the truth that's the problem for them on that particular point. And I need to just remember that and recall to be patient and work through it. And so in teaching others, we need patience. We also need patience in the process of growth, our personal growth. And then it's kind of an outshoot of that. The relations we have with other people as they are growing. In Colossians chapter 2, Colossians chapter 2 and verse 12, apostle writing the Christians says, "So as those who have been chosen of God, holy and beloved, put on a heart of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bearing with one another and forgiving each other, whoever has a complaint against anyone, just as the Lord forgave you, so also should you." He's telling Christians these characteristics they need to put on, and that's not going to happen overnight. I'm going to have to keep working and growing. As Peter described this in his letter, he said, to add to your faith virtue, or in your faith, supply that. And so it's a growth process. And in a local congregation like this, we're at all different levels of growth. We've got some brand new Christians. We've got some folks that have been Christians for 50, 60, maybe 70 years. We've got some folks that are beginning Bible students and some that are advanced and a whole lot of folks in between. We've got people who come from all kinds of different backgrounds and have different outlooks on things, and we're just going to grow at different levels. And we'll always be at different levels, and sometimes that can lead to a little bit of friction between people. And that's why the apostle stresses so much in putting on gentleness and patience and humility and kindness, and then couples that with, verse 13, bearing with one another and forgiving. And so I need to be patient with myself as I'm growing and patient with others as they grow. I remember one of the mistakes that I learned the hard way as a young preacher starting out in our first work. Sandy and I would go home on a Sunday evening. There's a congregation of about 50 or 60 people. And when it's that small, it's fairly evident who is and isn't there on any given Sunday. And we would go home on Sunday evening, and between the two of us, we'd go down the list of everybody who wasn't there. Well, why wasn't Sister So-and-so? Why wasn't Brother So-and-so there? Where were they? And we did that for, I don't know, a couple months, I guess. And we found out that wasn't being very productive for us. We were dwelling on all the wrong things. We were dwelling on some people who were struggling. And they were. And we needed to do what we could to encourage them, and we did. But some of them, that's just kind of the level where they were. They weren't going to be there every single time. They were just kind of growing into a little better performance. And so we had to learn how to deal with that a little bit better and be more patient with that. Because young preachers have the idea, not all of them, idea. And if you see a problem, I'm going to get a preach a sermon on it. That'll be that. We'll have that one fixed and we'll go on to the next one. You know, it just doesn't always work that way. Sometimes we have to circle back around and hit that again and find another way to say it again. And it just all takes patience. It's something that takes time. And we need to respect that. One other thing that I want to mention to you that sometimes takes longer than we would prefer, and that is rectifying problems that we have with other people, getting those things all straightened out. In the book of 1 Peter, chapter 2, Peter is writing to servants, Christians, who were servants, who were slaves. 1 Peter 2, verse 18, he said, "Servants, be submissive to your masters with all respect, not only to those who are good and gentle, but also to those who are unreasonable. For this finds favor if for the sake of conscience toward God, a person bears up under sorrows when suffering unjustly." Now listen to verse 20. "What credit is there if when you sin and are harshly treated, you endure it with patience? But if when you do what is right and suffer for it, you patiently endure it, this finds favor with God." Sometimes you have a conflict with somebody and you've looked at it and you're just sure that you're in the right and you've been unjustly treated here, and you'd like to get that corrected, but that can be a slow process at times. So hopefully if everybody has the right attitude, you can just sit down and talk about it and make whatever corrections and go on. That's the way it should be among brethren. But that's not always the way it is in every relationship. And so sometimes we just have to wait. I think that's probably the kind of circumstance that James is thinking about in our text in James chapter 5, because he has just talked in the beginning part of this chapter that we did not read about how some of these Christians were being greatly mistreated by the wealthy. They weren't being paid fairly, that some of their pay was being withheld. They were being oppressed, and they were in a somewhat helpless position to try to correct all of that. And James said, be patient. So the first thing that I need to remember is that there are some things that just take time. There is no quick answer to them. There's no quick fix. It's just going to take a while, and I need to be patient. That doesn't mean I don't do anything in the meantime. The farmer doesn't just go out there and plant his seed and then go sit in the house for 3 or 4 months and hopefully it all come up, and then he go out and harvest it. He's got work to do in the meantime. He monitors the conditions. He may have to do some weeding. He may have to check for insects and make sure they stay away. They have to irrigate. He may have to do a lot of things to try to nurture what he is planted. It's all part of the waiting process. And there are things that we can do while we're having to wait to try to strengthen and work on whatever it is, the goal we're trying to achieve. But when it's all said and done, there may be only so much we can do. It's going to have to wait on the Lord. Which brings me to the second thing that James emphasizes. And that is waiting on the Lord to do whatever it is the Lord is going to do. You notice in verse 7, he makes a reference to the coming of the Lord. In verse 8, he makes another reference to the coming of the Lord. In verse 9, he says the judge is standing right at the door. In verse 11, he talks about the outcome of the Lord's doing. Well, this is a theme that runs throughout this paragraph of what the Lord is doing, and the Lord's coming. What's he talking about here? And he says, wait until the coming of the Lord, and the Lord is standing at the door. What's he talking about? There's some different ideas about it. There's some question among Bible students as to who the rich are in this opening paragraph. But one theory about that is that the wealthy that's being talked about in the opening verses there may have been particularly the wealthy among some of the Jewish class who were oppressing some of their brethren who were Christians, and that when James talks about the coming of the Lord being near and it being right there at the door, that he's really talking about the destruction of Jerusalem. And when that occurred and the fall of the Jewish state, that would help to solve some of these problems that brethren were facing. Another way of looking at it is simply to say that we ask for God's help with ends that we're trying to accomplish. And in a sense, when God provides that help, it's a kind of a coming. It's not necessarily a coming in judgment at all, but it's a coming to aid. And the judge standing right there and being ready to help us. Anytime he intervenes, it's a kind of a coming. That's certainly true. It's also true that we never know when it is the Lord is going to come for the final time. He said of that day and hour, no one knows. And so since we don't know when it is, it's possible that it could be any time. And so we have to treat it as though it could occur at any time. And that may be James's reference. I'm not sure exactly what it is. But whatever it is, whichever those or some other possibility it might be, it seems to me like the bottom line comes out about the same, and that is that while I'm being patient, I need to leave the Lord's work to the Lord. I just need to be busy with what the Lord told me to do. I'll leave His part to Him to take care of. What's His part? Well, His part is going to be the correction aspect of things, the vengeance aspect of things. If I'm being mistreated and somebody needs to be punished for that, that's not my prerogative to do that. That's His. Listen to Paul in Romans chapter 12. Romans 12, verse 17, he said, never pay back evil for evil to anyone. Respect what is right in the sight of all men. If possible, so far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men. Never take your own revenge, beloved, but leave room for the wrath of God, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. If your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him a drink. For in so doing, you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. I've just got to resist the temptation which comes my way when things aren't going my way to take matters into hand and try to fix it all myself. It's not my place. I just need to patiently wait for the Lord to take care of me. And another thing that is the Lord's business is the growth business. Back to the teaching realm again. Preachers can plant. We can water. Remember what Paul said about that? God causes growth. And so I just need to be busy planting and watering and leave the growth to God. Let Him take care of that as He will. And that's important because sometimes we get tempted in our earnestness to see rapid growth to try to take some shortcuts that will swell the numbers more instead of letting God produce the kind of growth that He wants through the power of His Word. We're tempted sometimes to water down the message a bit to make it more palatable to people or make it easier for somebody, eliminate some of the changes maybe that he really needs to know.
Or we try to augment the gospel and its power and its wonderful story with some sort of carnal attractions and giveaways and all that sort of thing that'll bring them in. No. No, our task is to preach the word and leave the growth to God. He promised in passages like Isaiah 55 that his word will not return without accomplishing what he sent it out to do. So, let's understand that some things take some time and be willing to wait for those. And in the meantime, be busy with the things that the Lord wants us to be doing and leave the rest to him. Number three, James says that it's important that we don't complain during this waiting period. Do not complain, brethren, against one another, so that you yourselves may not be judged. What's the source of this complaining that he's talking about? Well, it may be that somebody has a particular complaint against somebody else, a particular problem that he's thinking about. Or it could be that, well, you've just gotten a little irritable. Gotten a little bit on the grouchy side because things aren't going. You ever get that way? I sure do. Sorry to say it, but I do. Once in a while, when things just aren't going my way, I just get a little short, a little irritable, and tend to start complaining. What's the problem with that? Why is that such a big deal? Why is that a barrier to patience? Well, there are three problems with complaining, at least. Number one, all the time I'm complaining, I'm focused on my problems instead of focused on the things that I ought to be focused on the good side of things and the positive side of things. There's something about negatives in our lives that grab our attention. The news media seem to know that bad news sells. People just gravitate to that for some reason. And there's something about a tendency we have to focus on the wrong. I've illustrated it this way. If after a sermon, let's say there's 100 people present that heard a sermon. If all 100 people came out and shook my hand and commented on the sermon, 99 people said that was a good lesson. And one guy said, that was a sauce. Which one of the 100 would I be thinking about on the way home? You know, don't you? What is there about us that wants to focus on that? But we tend to focus on the things that are bothersome, the things that are not the way we want, instead of looking around and being satisfied with so much that we have. I think about the story of Esther in that regard. Haman, remember Haman, the villain in that? Haman, he was a wealthy man. He was made prime minister. He had everything, except that Mordecai wouldn't bow down. He even came home one night celebrating that to his wife because he'd been invited to dinner at Esther's house with the king. He talked about that. He had all his sons. He had all the money. He had the position. He even got to go to a private dinner at the queen's house. And he said to his wife, he said, yet all this avails me nothing every time I see Mordecai. There it is. That negative thing. And when we're complaining, we're focused on the wrong thing. Number two, complaining discourages not only ourselves, but the people we're complaining to, or the people that have to hear it. They really don't want to hear it. There's one fellow that I asked him once in a while. I said, well, how you doing today? He says, well, I'm doing great. I I know he's really not, but he said, nobody else wants to hear it if I'm not, so I might as well say that. But we really don't want to hear everybody's complaints all the time, do we? But I tell you the third reason that we need to give up complaining. Because complaining is sinful. Read 1 Corinthians chapter 10. I'm not going to take time to take you there tonight. But in 1 Corinthians 10, Paul talks about the history of the Israelites in the wilderness. And he says, with many of them, God was not pleased. And he categorizes their sins. They tested the Lord. They're guilty of idolatry out there. They committed fornication. And they grumbled. They complained. Now, who puts complaining on the same plane with idolatry and fornication? Paul did in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. So I need to quit complaining. Doesn't do me any good. Doesn't do anybody else any good. It's just rumor. And it just makes it that much more difficult for me to be patient with whatever it is that is not to my life. And then number four, James says that we need to learn something from other people. Talks about the prophets of the Old Testament. As an example, brethren, of suffering and patience, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. Well, the prophets suffered, didn't they? Stephen, when he was making his speech in Acts chapter 7 before the council, asked, which of the prophets did your fathers not persecute? Stephen was having a hard time thinking of one that escaped opposition. What can I learn from the prophets of the Old Testament? I think I can learn two valuable lessons from them. Number one, the opposition that we face in serving the Lord is not personal. It's really opposition to the Lord. It's the Lord in us that's the problem. When God sent Ezekiel out, or when he would send Amos or Hosea or one of those prophets, Jeremiah, probably one of the most persecuted of all of the prophets, when he would send those to the people, he sent them with his message. He told Ezekiel, he said, now you go preach to this people. He said, they're an obstinate people. Whether they'll listen to you or whether they won't, you just go preach. They would have liked Ezekiel okay if Ezekiel had said what they wanted to hear. It's because he was saying what God told him to say. That was the problem. And so Jesus told the disciples in John 15 and 16 that when the world turned against them, it wasn't them. He said, it's because of me and you. That's the problem. And the other thing that I can learn from the prophets is that I just need to go on doing what the Lord told me to do regardless of the response. If it's not what I'd like it to be, well, I just keep right on with the work anyway. And that's what God told Ezekiel. He said, they may not listen to you, but you go preach anyway. And he said, at least they'll know that a prophet's been among them. So I need to learn from the prophets not to be overly concerned if I face some opposition in my service to the Lord. I need to not try to invite that. I need to, as Paul said, as much as possible, live in peace with all men. But just go and do what's right. Just keep doing what's right. And then he mentions Job. He said, you've heard of the endurance of Job, patience of Job, we're accustomed to hear. What can I learn from Job? Well, I can learn from Job, first of all, that righteous people do, in fact, have problems. And they do suffer sometimes. That was the whole premise of the book, that the only reason that Job suffered is because God blessed him. There really wasn't much integrity about him per se. It was just a kind of a, God blessed him and so he did what God wanted. And so they made a test case out of Job, but Job didn't know what was going on. All he knew was he was doing right so far as he knew, and he was suffering. And his friends all came along and said, well, you must be doing something terrible. God's people just sometimes have problems, and we sometimes have to deal with them. As I said in the very first lesson, when James talked about encountering various trials, God doesn't shield us. He doesn't insulate us from all the things that everybody else has to face. We just have to deal with it. Now, God's word certainly shields us from the self-inflicted problems of sin to the point, the extent we leave that off. But I didn't learn that from Job. But I also learned from Job that there's not always a direct cause and effect relationship with some problem that I'm facing. It's not necessarily some specific thing that I did or somebody else did that's caused it. But the point James drives home from Job is the outcome of the Lord's dealing. You have heard of the endurance of Job and have seen the outcome of his dealing. If we're going to talk about the patience of Job, if by patience we mean not becoming irritable and questioning and being short, Job's not the best example, because he asked a lot of questions and you could tell he was irritated. That's not the point James makes so much as the endurance. No matter how many questions Job had, and no matter how hard a time he had dealing with what he had, he didn't give up. He kept going. And when it was all over with, and he got the answers that he was looking for as to why things were happening the way they were, he was blessed in the end. Richly blessed, even more greatly than he was at the beginning of the story. And that's what James points to. You have heard of the endurance of Job and have seen the outcome of the Lord's dealings, that the Lord is full of compassion and merciful. And he's telling us, maybe the Lord is not intervening right now. Maybe it's just like Brother led us in the song a while ago. In his time, God will deal with it. I don't need to be concerned about that. Just keep focusing on the outcome with the assurance that when it's all said and done, God will do everything that he said he would and more. And I need to trust that and keep my eye on that and keep moving forward. And if somehow I could learn to do these things on a regular basis, it'll help me to be a more patient person. Wait for the coming of the Lord. Keep my focus there. Keep on doing what the Lord tells me to do. And with that, we'll bring to a close our study of the book of James. Hope you'll be able to take the lesson tonight, the lessons throughout the week, and let at least some point from them resonate with you and be able to remember that. I've been thinking about the lesson today. I was working on it early this morning, and then I'm thinking about it in the afternoon, like how. Where do I need to apply it? What do I need to be working on? What do I need to be doing better? I've already thought of a couple of things, and I'll think of a few more, I'm sure. But that's what we'll do with these lessons, and I hope it'll be beneficial to you. It's been a great week together with you, and I appreciate so much the opportunity. Before we close tonight, I'd like to one more time offer to anyone in this assembly who has never become a Christian gospel invitation to do so. The Bible describes the patience of God, the long suffering of God. Peter said that that's the reason that we're continuing on, because God is not willing for any to perish, but wants all to come to repentance. But there is a limit. There will come a time God's patience will be no more. But right now, we're not there yet. Right now, he's still waiting. Right now, he's still giving us all the opportunity to change. whatever way we need to be the kind of people He wants us to be. Never become a Christian. Don't put it off. Become a Christian today. Start living as a disciple of Jesus, and you can anxiously look forward to His coming. James talks throughout this text about the coming of the Lord, and if you'll just ask yourself how you view that, that may tell you a lot about where you think you are. Are you excited about that? Are you looking forward to it? Are you anxious for it to come? Or do you have a sense of, I don't know whether I'm ready for that yet or not. A little sense of dread. If you're not right with the Lord, don't leave here tonight in that condition. In some way we can help you with that. Come on down to the front. Stand together and stand.